So does anyone here remember magic eye illusions? On their website, they refer to their illusions as the illusions that ignited the worldwide 3D craze of the 1990s. I think people either loved or hated these illusions because you can either see them or you can't. I think that it's very hard to do on the screen. But these are the things where if you hold them up at some distance in front of you and look at them, and you're supposed to let your eyes blur and sort of relax and maybe imagine that you're focusing on the wall behind the image. And then suddenly, sometimes, this 3D image appears that is hidden in this mass of figures and images. I loved these things because I can do it. I can see. It takes me a while and I have to move it back and forth. But that's what you would see coming up out of this picture if you were able to. I think that optical illusions are great fun. In fact, I think they're amazing. According to a website called Optics for Kids, which I thought would be at a level that at least I could understand, optical illusions can use color, light, and patterns to create images that can be deceptive or misleading to our brains. The information gathered by the eye is processed by the brain, creating a perception that in reality does not match the true image. Perception refers to the interpretation of what we take in through our eyes. Optical illusions occur because our brain is trying to interpret what we see, and it's trying to make sense of the world around us. Optical illusions simply trick our brains into seeing things which may or may not be real. Simple enough. Our brain uses the information that it has available to make the most sense of the world in which we are living. And in the process, on occasion, it gets tricked. It sees things that may or may not be real, may or may not be accurate, may or may not even exist. It's pretty fascinating, I think. So we're going to quickly go through a few examples, some of which I'm sure you have already seen, some of which maybe are new. So the question in this, which line is longer? Which line looks longer? The top one looks longer. What do we all know? What about this? Which window is bigger? I've kind of set you up to know the answers to that. The back one looks bigger. They are, in fact, the same size, and they are, in fact, parallel to one another. Which yellow line is longer? Which yellow line looks longer? The back one. They are also the same size. It's a matter of perspective. This one is very familiar. Do you see a vase or two faces? You see two faces. Anybody see a vase right off? And this one, do you see the young woman first or the old lady? The young one. I don't know what this says about us, what we see, but can you all see both? The young lady, she has her head turned toward the back. This is a necklace on her face, on her throat. And then the old lady, this is her mouth and her chin and her nose, eye. Can you see it? Okay, I have a few now that are, it's a little disappointing because on the big screen, they don't quite have the effect. This, closer to you or on a smaller, it looks like, and if you want to see this on my iPad afterwards, you can, it looks like the back is moving. You got to see the ball in the middle. It looks like the back dots are sort of like on a slow kind of treadmill moving down. I can see it right now. It's kind of blowing my mind. This one, can you see anything in that? It looks like it's rippling like a flag. And that these have to do with our peripheral vision. This one, also a little disappointing. If you look at one, the outside might look like it's sort of spinning around. Or if you look at the outside, the inside looks like it's spinning around. Very disappointing, actually. Here's some more that are, this one is a little more fun and a little more easy to see. That's some sidewalk art. That looks very 3D. The woman is just sitting flat on the sidewalk. It appears as though she is riding a horse out of the centers of the earth. Center of the earth. And now a couple of some skin art. That's just the pencils creating that picture. And then this next one is the last one for now. A pretty fascinating tattoo. See what it makes you want to do. Don't you want to reach out and grab that guy? Pretty remarkable, the things that our eyes and our mind and color and light can do. So now before we move on to the gospel passage, I want to talk just a little bit about something that I have learned from Brené Brown. You've heard me mention that name before. Some of you are more familiar with, she's a researcher, a research scientist at the University of Houston, and does a lot of her major research focus is shame. She's done tremendous, deep, long, broad research on shame. She has a phrase that has been helpful in her life and that has been helpful to many others that is, the story I'm telling myself right now is, and I'm going to read a little excerpt, an example from her, an excerpt from one of her books. So this is her own story. She says, "My husband Steve and I were having one of those days. That morning we had overslept. Charlie, one of their kids, couldn't find his backpack, and Ellen, their daughter, had to drag herself out of bed because she'd been up late studying. Then at work, I had 5 back-to-back meetings, and Steve, who is a pediatrician, was dealing with cold and flu season. By dinner time, we were all practically in tears. Steve opened the refrigerator and sighed. We have no groceries. Not even lunch meat. I shot back. I'm doing the best I can. You can shop too. I know, he said in a measured voice. I do it every week. What's going on? Then she says, I knew exactly what was going on. I had turned his comment into a story about how I am a disorganized, unreliable partner and mother. I apologized and started my next sentence with the phrase that has become a lifesaver in my marriage, parenting, and professional life. The story I'm making up is that you were blaming me for not having groceries and that I was screwing up. Steve said, no, I was going to shop yesterday, but I didn't have time. I'm not blaming you. I'm hungry. And so the idea is, like with optical illusions, that we see things or we perceive things and we tell ourselves a story about what is true. And so many times, probably most of the time, it's not true or it's not accurate or it's not the whole truth. But this is what happens to us time and time again. So I can imagine that it's pretty easy to see the connection to our text for today. The things that our brains do with images and colors and light to trick our perception, to trick us, is what we do to each other. We think we see things, or we do see things, we perceive things, and then we interpret them in ways that are not fully accurate. It happens in a multitude, it happens in multiple places in our text, in the text that Jennifer read. We see Matthew, first of all. And what, if you read my reflection in the Overlook yesterday or this morning, I tried to imagine what were the other Jews around him thinking when they see Matthew. They see a tax collector. They see someone who steals from them. They see someone who is working for the Romans, basically is working for the enemy. And not only that, but is taking more than they need to take. I read one commentary that said people of the time thought they were no better than murderers. They were the lowest of the low. And that's what people saw when they looked at Matthew. The synagogue leader's daughter was dead. People were mourning. People were performing the rituals and the things that you do when someone dies. And so that's what they saw. That's what they understood. The woman who had been hemorrhaging for 12 years, they saw someone who was ritually unclean at a minimum. I'd imagine that they saw someone who was kind of just dirty seeming. They didn't want to be around her, that she was, because of the bleeding and hemorrhaging, she was an outcast. She was marginalized. Maybe she was, I'm imagining that she was bent over because she was trying to touch the fringe of Jesus' robe. Was there, maybe that was out of, bent over out of shame. Maybe that was bent over out of pain. Maybe it was bent over, she was bent over out of hopelessness. 12 years she'd been trying to be healed. No one had been able to help her. And so maybe for all of these reasons, people saw her in addition as someone to pity. That poor, poor woman. We don't really want, we want to keep our distance from her, but we will feel sad, feel sorry for her. So the people around these people made judgments based on what they could perceive. And obviously what they could perceive and what we can perceive is limited. That's just a fact. Just like with optical illusions, perception, as the website explained, refers to the interpretation of what we take in through our eyes. And as we all know and experienced with some of these optical illusion examples, sometimes our brains lead us to see things that don't even exist. It's a kind of mind-boggling fact. And the same is true with people. Our perception of them, whatever it's based on, whether it's based on our own internal experiences and history, whether it's based on things that we see and have happened in the past, whatever it is that's based on, it's likely that our perception, our interpretation is not accurate. And in fact, maybe way off base. At the very least, it's not the whole story. So clearly, Jesus sees differently than we do. Jesus sees more of the picture than we do. When we, or the, when the Jews of the time saw Matthew, they saw a sinner. They saw someone despicable. They saw a terrible person, no better than a murderer. When they saw the dead girl, they saw someone who was dead, no more life. When they saw the hemorrhaging woman, they saw someone who was dirty, who was unclean, who was an outcast. In all of those cases, Jesus not just saw differently than we do, than the people did at the time, but he sees more. He sees healing and wholeness, and he sees restoration and reconciliation, and he sees new life and hope. Thank goodness. Thank goodness Jesus doesn't see like we do. And there's one more thought. This all might have been a little bit on the nose. I have one more thought to share with you that I'm just going to leave you thinking about. And that is, this is a thought that occurred to me a few days ago. What if another way to think about these stories and the people in these stories is not... is not that they're stories about those people, not stories about that person and that woman and that man and what were they about, but what if they were stories also about us? What if they're stories, or they can be stories, we can think of them as stories about the parts of ourselves that we try to push away, parts of ourselves that we try to deny, the parts of ourselves that we perceive as undesirable, as untouchable, as outcast, as shameful, as sinful. Because we all have those parts of us. And what if these stories are an opportunity for us to see those parts of ourselves, not the parts of the people out there around us, but the parts of ourselves, and to welcome them, to acknowledge them, to bring them in as parts of ourselves, and know that Jesus is saying, that's okay. Come and be whole. Acknowledge all of the parts of who you are and come and be with me. What if it's an opportunity for us to think that all, not just all of us, but all of the parts of each of us are accepted as part of the fullness of our being. Jesus does see more than we see. And not just in the world out there, not just in other people's lives, but in us as well. May we see more and more like Jesus so that we can love and be more and more like Jesus. Amen.